Hopefully it's working now. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, he says, Hokhidami, right? Likewise over here, when you know, as we examine the psukim in the Torah, all right, when we're dealing with what? When we're dealing with monetary matters, right? So what does it say? It says, V'nikrav bal habayis el ho'olehim. In other words, the litigant comes to the court, right? Now, what is the implication of that? So he says, Mishas Kriva Shlosha. In other words, at the time when the litigant comes into the court, how many judges do we need? We need three. We need three. And we're not talking about three at the end of the verdict, we're talking about at the time that, you know, they begin sitting. And therefore, as we said, of course, I mean, they're qualified to judge, but the point is, we're not going into numbers beyond, you know, reason. Okay? So, they say, all right, but Rabbi still must have some reason behind him, right? So, the Gemara says, Alahainu Tama de Rabbi. This was Rabbi's reasoning. It's written, Asher Yarshiyun Elohim. Okay? So, this is what the passage says. Literally, whomever the judges condemn. That's the literal meaning, all right? So, Yarshiyun Elohim, the fact that Yarshiyun is a plural form, and we say always that a plural form means that you have to have at least two, right? You have to have at least two if it's plural. So that's trei, he says, that's two. Ne'emar Elohim lemato, ve'ne'emar Elohim lemalo. The word Elohim is repeated in one pasuk, and then it's repeated in another pasuk. So ma lemato shnayim, just as we're talking about the time when, you know, they have to come, you know, to the court, it's two. So after the malo shnayim, right? So likewise, when it comes to judging, you also have to have two. V'yein bezdin shokel, and you cannot have an even number of judges. So mosifin lehem od echad, and we add another one to them, and what do we come up with? Hare kad chamisha. So we wind up with five judges, because he says at the time when it ends, we have to have these three, and it has to be, as we said, it has to be a majority. Okay. So why, this is his reasoning.
Why? Yeah.
Because he feels that Yarshiyun means at the time, Arshiyun means that they condemn. When is the condemnation? At the beginning or at the end?
Yeah.
At the end, right? So this is what he's saying. You have to have at least two. According to the pasuk. According to the pasuk, which is plural, right? But you cannot have two judges at the end. This is his reasoning.
You can't start with two. You have to start with three.
According to him, you could start with three. But at the end, you have to wind up with at least three judges who condemn or who give a verdict. Okay? This is his reasoning.
All right, this is reasoning.
It's based upon that. Right.
The idea being that if there are three.
Right.
Can it be unanimous, three? It's got to be
four
left over.
It could be. It could be. But he's not. But remember, he has. They're debating the principle over here of majority rule.
Right.
I'm not talking at this particular case of a unanimous decision.
Okay.
So unanimous decision, as I told you, in Dine Mabinos is perfectly fine. In other words, in monetary matters. But if all the judges in a criminal case, I mean in a case where death penalty could be assessed at the end, if they're all in agreement, then according to the Gemara that we'll learn some later, future date, we feel that the judges must be in cahoots with one another or something like that, and therefore they feel that it's not the right verdict.
So what is the halacha then?
The halacha still follows that we have to have three judges and that's it. Fartik. Okay.
I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
You're looking for a majority.
Right.
So, a majority, so you have to have, in addition to three,
right.
He doesn't have to have two more to have make it five. If he had one more, it would also be a majority.
Not necessarily. You have
three,
two and two.
Three
but
to one
you have
would
it on
also
four.
Be a majority.
No.
But then it could be two and three.
Right. He feels that that they still have to have a majority, according to at least a majority of one, whatever it may be. But in his case, he feels that you have to have three at the end, and so that they're a majority of five, right? Three votes. That's what he feels.
Right.
We see, I mean, because he feels, you know, that at the end, this is what is required. Okay, we're now ready for Dalet or Dalet?
Yeah.
Okay. Sylvia. And Goldie. Okay. Right. Yes. Okay, this is simple. All right, so now... Not valid, we continue the argument, but actually we go into a different area altogether, as we'll see in a second. Okay? Remember, he based his argument upon the fact that it's written, that is, Rebbe based his argument on the fact that it's written Yarshi Yud in the Torah, right? Asher Yarshi Yud Elohim. That's what he says. And since it's written Yarshi Yud Elohim, since it's the plural form, so therefore it indicates he'd have, you know, at least two. Okay? So that's why he came to the conclusion that you have to have five at the end. This was his reasoning. All right. But what did the Chachamim say? They said that you only have to have three. But if they're going to take a look at the same pasuk, how do they interpret this pasuk? This is what we're starting with over here. Okay? Rabbanon Yarshi Yon. If you take a look at the spelling in the Torah itself, the Vav in Yarshi Yud doesn't exist. Here in the Gemara it exists because Gemara spells out sounds that in the Torah do not exist. You understand?
So is that the second Yud you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the Vav, which is a plural.
Oh, okay.
In Hebrew, for example, I'll show you. Okay.
It's not here.
Huh? I don't know if it's here or not, but that's it should be there. I'm explaining it.
There's no vav in there.
No, that's correct. That's what I'm saying. They say when you take a look at the spelling of the word, it's written without a vav. Therefore, it could be interpreted not as a plural, but as a singular. Okay? And even the word Elohim, after all, that we refer to the Rebbeinu Shleilu, for example,
form,
I mean, you know, we use, you could use a plural form, but we all have to understand that as one, you know.
One.
Okay. So, Yarshi Yon, they say, is written, you know, without the Vav, so that therefore it's singular, and that being the case, at the time when the verdict is given, if it's only singular, then in that particular case, don't interpret it as a plural, wind up with five, but all you need is three. This is what they're answering. Okay. But this now, as I said, introduces a broader area. Omar Rab Yitzhak, Bar Yossi or Bar Yosef, either one, take your pick. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, all right, said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he said that Rabbi, for Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, the Shammai, for Reb Shimon, for Rabbi Akiva, kol hu sevir lehu yesh eim la mikra. Okay. We have to understand now what is the subject matter that we're dealing with. As we see from the writing of Yarshi Yud, that it's spelt without a vav, we have to realize that in the Torah, many words are written, and it could be interpreted either singular or plural. You understand? That's where you have to go according to what? According to what we call the Masorah. But what is a Masorah? Masorah is the way it actually is written, whereas the Mikra that they're talking about over here is the way it is read. According to the Masorah, the way it's written, is there a Vav in Yashiyun? No. Okay? But according to the reading, the way, you know, we are told we have to read it. How do we read it? We read it as Yashiyun. Okay? I can give you a million examples of something like that. For example, the service of Yom Kippur, you know, we read in Parsha Achrei Mos a couple of weeks ago. Okay? It's written over there, Sobach Es Yodov, right, that the high priest has to lay his hands on the Rosh, you know, on the Sayir, in other words, on the head of the goat that's going to be sent away, etc., etc. Okay. Remember I mentioned before that one of the acts when you bring a sacrifice is that you have to have smicha, you have to put your hands down on the head of it to show that, you know, you are the one who's offering this animal, okay? Now, if you take a look at the Torah over there, Yodov is spelled simply Yod Dalet Vav. Now, how can I read that? I have to read it. I could read it, in other words, as Yodov, right? Not Yodov, in other words, his hand rather than his hands. You understand? So, the answer is that we have a tradition that tells us also, actually, if it's written as Shtei Yodov, it can't be Shtei Yodov. two already implies, right, even though we spell it like a singular, right. Right. But it means it has to be plural. Okay.
Does it say
Shtei? Huh? Sabacha wrote Shtei Yodov. Right. There it's written, okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that Yodov is spelled Yod Dalet Vav, which could be read as Yodo instead of Yodo, okay? So we have lots of other things, you know, also in many places.
When they talk about B'nai, about the sons of, I can't remember the place where we studied about it also. It was written a certain way, it was the sons instead of children or something like that.
Well, according to Masorah, I mean, certain letters are written very large.
Yeah.
The case of the word Vayikra at the beginning of the Sefer Vayikra, the Aleph over there is written very small. This is all the tradition, you know. This is Masorah. That's what we mean. The way it is written, according to, when we talk about the Masoretic text, if you ever read the, ever came across the expression. But it means the way it is written at the top. Okay. By tradition, how it should be written. Okay. You know, about Kriya, you have to know what you're reading over there, because there are no dots, no notes, no nothing over there, right? I can give you a pasuk, for example, in Bishalach. It's written the S, Ayin Mem Vav, Shalach, Ayin Mem Vav. How do you read it? The first case, V'es Amo, Shalach Imo, or something like that. Yeah. So, even though Amo and Imo are identical in their writing, but you have to know by the sense and also by the tradition, you know, how you read it. So, okay. So, getting back to our text over here. All right. They quote four authorities. Rabbi Yehud ben Rowetz, Beis Shammai, and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Akiva. Kuhu Sevir Lahu, they are all in agreement that Yesh Eim Lamikro, right? That you have to go according to the way you read it. So, Rabbi Hoda Moran, Rabbi, just the case that we've just discussed, right? It's written without a vav, but nevertheless, how do you have to read it? As if it had a vav in it. Okay. so good. So that's the reference over there. Now, who are the other Chachamim that they mentioned? Okay. Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, in his case, the Tanya, we learned. Shoalo Talmin, Mr. Rabbi Yehuda ben Roetz, they said to him, Ekra ani Shvuayim, Yochol Tehe, the lettuce, the kevo, tebeo, shivim. It's an Ekra ani Shivim. That's the way we have to read it. Shall I read it as Shivim? Now, what's the difference between, you see, it's written simply Shin Beis Ayin Yud Mem, as you see it over there. But what is the difference of meaning between Shivim and Shvuayim?
Well, one means 70, and
right.
Shvuayim is a dose, isn't it?
No, Shvuayim means 2 weeks. When you have the Ayim ending, very often it indicates two. Okay? Yom is 1 day. What is Yomayim?
2 days.
Okay. So, Shavua is a week, and Shavuayim, 2 weeks. Chodesh is a month, Chodshayim, 2 months, and so on. Shana, a year, Shnatayim, 2 years, and so on. You see, so that they're saying, how should I read it? Should I read it as Shivim? Or should I read it as Shvuayim? Okay? What they're talking about over here is when a woman gives birth. Okay? So, in the case of the Zohar, the case where she gives birth to a male child, then she is a Nida for 7 days. Okay? But if she gives birth to a girl, then she is a Nida for 2 weeks. I mean, this is what the word Torah says, okay? So how do we have to read it? We have to read it as Shvuayim. But the Talmidim challenge that. They say, maybe instead of reading it as Shvuayim, maybe I should read it as Shivim. So that, in other words, how long should she remain a Nida? She should remain a Nida for 70 days. You can see there's quite a difference between 2 weeks and 70 days, okay? So that's what they're asking. Okay. So, okay. Oh, Ekadi Shivim, Yochol Tehe Yeles, the Kevat Tehe Shivim, maybe she should be needed for 70 days. So, Abal Ahed. So he said to them, look, Timei V'tiher B'Zochor, V'Timei V'tiher B'Nekevat. The Torah says how long, you know, she has to be a Nida. That's Timei, and how long she is in the state of Taharon, okay? Both for male and for me, and female, imagine, okay? Ma, kishatiher b'zochar, b'nekeva kiflayim, right? Just as when the period of Taharon that they mentioned for a male, and the female is twice as much. So afkishet timei bezochor. So likewise, as to how long she has to be a nida in the case of the male child, right? Binekevek tiflayim. So in the case of the female, it's twice as much. So in other words, if she has to be a nida for 1 week, then she has to be a nida in the case of giving birth to a girl, shuraim, 2 weeks. Okay. This is logical reason. But the Achar Sheyotzu, but after they left, Yotzu Masu Achrehem, he said, hey boys, come on back. I'm all ahead, he said to them. Iyatem Zekukim Lechach. Says, you don't need my logical reasoning for that. Why? Because Shvuayim Kaminon. We read it as Shvuayim, 2 weeks, right? The Yesh Eim Labikva, and the principle is that your drash has to be based upon how we read it. Eim, of course, literally means mother, but in this case, Yesh Eim Labikva means that we give the mother of all meanings is based upon what? upon the way you read it. Not, I mean, you know, the way that the tradition tells us it has to be read and not, you know, the spelling. Okay? All right. So now, the next example that they gave was Beishabai. Okay? Beishabai did not. Beishabai, we have a Mishnah which says Beishabai Yomim. Beishabai say that Kol Adintonin Al Mizbeach Achisel Shenisonim Maton Achas Kiper. Okay. So here we come into the question about sacrifices. Okay? And if you remember, there are certain steps that have to take place in the case of a sacrifice. We already mentioned, for example, you know, that the balabas, whoever's giving the sacrifice, has to put his hands on this. All right, that's smicha. Okay. And then, of course, what happens, you know, then the next step is shechita, obviously. The animal has to be killed, has to be slaughtered. Okay. Then what's the next step? The next step is what we call Kabbalah. What I mean by Kabbalah over here means that the Kohen who is there officiating with you know, the person that's giving the sacrifice has to collect blood from the animal. Okay? And then what is the next thing? Then it's Hakrava. He has to bring it near to the altar. And finally, what is the next one? It's Zerika. Zerika means you have to sprinkled it against it. Now, in the Torah, you know, they mention, you know, how many in the case of certain sacrifices. But at any rate, it's gone into more detail in the chapter Ezehu Mekomei Shatzvachim, which we find in many a siddur. At the early part of it, take a look at the early pages over there. It's a chapter from the Gemara Zevachim dealing with sacrifices, and there they detail for the different types of sacrifices how much blood has to be sprinkled and where. Okay, now we have different sacrifices, as we know. I mentioned various ones as we go along and so on. Okay. In the case of some sacrifices, you're supposed to sprinkle on two opposite corners, but sprinkle it in such a way that, let's say, you sprinkle it on this corner, some of the blood is going to spill over here and here, right? And then on the opposite corner, you sprinkle over there, and again the same thing happens. In some cases, one sprinkling is all that's required. However, in the case of Chatos, there it says, and by the way, the altar had a red line called a Chut HaSikra, the red. In the case of Chatos, the ruling is over there that it has to be on the four corners of the of the altar. Okay, so in other words, what is the amount that has to be sprinkled? You have to sprinkle on each of the four corners. Okay, so with some it's two, with some it's one, so and so. But what he is saying over here, okay, in the Mishnah, is that if you gave only one sprinkling for all of the sacrifices except the chatos, then in that particular case you have fulfilled it, even though it's not what it should be, but still you have fulfilled that particular function. Okay? With the chatos, but in the case of the chatos, then the shtei matonis, then you have to have, as we said, at least two sprinklings, one in each, so at least, you know, all four corners will be covered, but you only need two as the minimum. It's not the way it should be done, but, you know, we always have, but very often, we make a difference between what you should do to start with, and if you fail to do it, would you be Yoise, the Spirit saying. You know what we mean by Yoise, that you fulfilled anyway the mitzvah. Not the best way, but you know, but you're still fulfilling the mitzvah, okay? So what he's saying over here is that one sprinkle is sufficient to be Yoise for all sacrifices except for tachatos, which requires doing. Okay. Uveis Hillel Oimer, and Beis Hillel say, Af Bechatos Shenisal Maton Achas Kippe. You know, so Beis Shammai said you have to have at least, in the case of Chatos, two sprinklings, but Beis Hillel is even more lenient in this matter, and they say that one sprinkling would be sufficient to fulfill the mitzvah of you know, sprinkling the Zerika. The other Rav Huda said, my Tama de Beis Shammai, how did Beis Shammai get their reasoning? You know, that what? That at least two, right? It should be four, but at least two. How do you get that? So he's saying, Karnos. There are three different Pesukim that say it has to be on the, literally, the horns of the Mizbeach. You know, there was elevations on each of the four corners, right? So they're holding the horns. So it's written Karnos, but it's not written, but it's pronounced, right? Karnos. Harekan Shei, so six. And as we said before, are we Dorshin Techilos? Do we count the first mention? The answer is no. So what do we have left? So we have twice left Karnos, right? So two times two equals four. So that's what they say. So that's Harekan Arba, right? So that gives us, Harekan Sheish, excuse me, there's six, right? Arba the mitzvah, right? Four, in order to do the mitzvah correctly. Ushtayim la'akev, and two would suffice in order simply to fulfill if you didn't do it the right way. Uveis Hillel Oimrim, but Beis Hillel say Karnos. Even though it's written Karnos, but it's written without what?
Vav.
So it says Harekan Arba, right? So we have over here, you know, first one is written plural, they say, so that's two. Karnas and Karnas is written singular, right? So two plus one, Harekan Arba, right? So we have Gimel the Mitzvah, so you should have at least three in order to fulfill it correctly. V'achas li'akev, but one will suffice. The Eba Kohu Mitzvah, so now they argue with, you know, they say maybe we should say that we needed all of these psukim, you know, for the mitzvah. So they say, Kapora Bichdi Lo Ashkecha. We don't find that we're going to have a Kapora, in other words, you know, the sacrifice is to be Machaper, it's to atone for the sin of the person that is bringing it, correct? So we don't find that it's not going to be for nothing. In other words, you can't say that all four, and if you don't do four, then it's nothing. Because you cannot say that the person is going to, acquire the merit for the sacrifice if there was no sprinkling, whatever. So therefore, there has to be at least one sprinkling, they say. Okay.
All of this comparing numbers to numbers. How we figure here, and it's going to compare how
yes.
we figure the numbers of judges. Is that the reason?
Yes.
What we're talking about?
Yes. That's what started it off.
Yes.
It started it off. Right. Exactly. Because
here we're figuring
right.
this way.
Exactly. In other words, just as we said, Yar Shiyun, should we read it as plural or as singular, right? So here too, if we're going to start it, we're playing around with numbers. So do we read it as a plural, or do we read it as a singular, and so on and so forth? That's exactly what the answer is. Right. Rabbi Shimon, let's see what time is it? You know, we'll do it one or two more. Rabbi Shimon, what about what are we dealing with in his case? Rabbi Shimon, Neumer, I have wonders. Right. Rabbi Shimon, Netanya. Okay. It's the same way. I have the tendency to wonder sometimes. All right. As we have learned. Okay. Says Taim Kehil Koson Ushlishis Afilu Tevach. Now here what we're talking about is how many walls does a sukkah require in order to be a sukkah. So according to Rab Shimon, right, he says the Chachamim say, you know, because if you don't mind it mentioned, then it's the Chachamim first who are mentioned. It says Taim Kehil Koson. Two of the walls have to be really real walls, right? Ushlishis, so the third wall is afilu tefach. If it's only, let's say, about 4 inches high, it already qualifies as a third wall. Okay? That's what they say. I mean, we're used to four-wall circuses. You know. That's the way it should be. However, the question is, if a person could not put together four walls, right, then what would be the minimum that we'd have to? So the answer is, if he has two walls, let's say a wall here, and then something just as a little symbol, so that would already count as three walls. You understand? Even though it's only at a tefach, it's only 4 inches or something like that. Okay, handful. Okay, but Rabbi Shimon, yeah, he says, Omer. Shalosh Hilchoson, you have to have three real walls, right? Revius Hafil Tevachan, the fourth wall could be just, you know, a symbolic wall. So, B'mai Kom Iflegay, so what is the difference of opinion between Rabbi Shimon and Chachomim? So he says, Rabbonin Sabre, the rabbis of the opinion, Yesh Eim Labasores, right? That you show preference for the way it is spelt in the Torah, right? And Rab Shimon Sovar, he's of the opinion Yeshem La Mikra, that it's based upon how we read it. Sa Rabbonin Sovre Yeshem La Masoris, right? They say, we have to base it on the way it is spelled, it says, because it's written Basukos. Pasukos. But notice that where is the Vav? Only in the last one, right? Whereas the first two are written without a Vav. So in other words, 1, 2, and 2, Harekad Arba, so it gives us 4. Dal Chatko Legufe. Now, 1 we need in order to tell us simply that there is such a thing as a Sukkah. That's what we said before, that ein dosh in tefillah, in other words, the first time that you come across it, you don't count it. You have to count subsequent, but not the first one. That only introduces the subject matter, right? So pasha lehu trust. So now only 3 are left over. Asai hilchaso. So that we have a halacha lemeshav yisay. In other words, it's a tradition that says girato l'shlishis, that it reduces the third wall. Yukimto atevah. And it establishes that it's enough if it's only a tefach. It's only this 4 inches. But Rabbi Shimon Sovar, he, however, is of the opinion that you have to read it, right? And how do you read it? Basukos, 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 right? Harekan sheish. It means that's 6. Dal chat kro legufe. Then in that particular case, take the first one as the introduction and don't count it, right? Poshaluhu Arba, but we still have 4 left, right? And Asai Hilchasogiratolavis, And the halacha of Moshe B'Sinai reduced the fourth wall to a tefach. Well, it works beyond tefach. Okay. So that's the reason for the difference between Rabbi Shimon and the Chacham. And, alright, let's finish with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, the Tanya. What case are we talking about? The case of a decision of Rabbi Akiva. He says, Rabbi Akiva, Omer, right, he says, B'dayan Ravi is dom, she yotsu b'shtei basim, she betabi b'yo hel. Okay. The question is, if you remember, a dead person in an area which is covered over, they refer to it as a no hel. Okay. Somebody comes into that area and he becomes what? Becomes tubby. Okay. And of course, if he's a Kohen, that's even a more serious business. Okay. So, how much blood has to render the, how much blood oozing from the dead person will automatically bring about tuma? That's what the question is. In other words, only a drop, then it wouldn't have any effect. But if it's a sufficient quantity, then in that case it does. So he says that the quantity of blood is revius. What is a revius? Revius, some say a revius is 3.4 ounces. Others say that more is like 4 ounces or something like that. That's what it is. But if you have that amount of blood oozing, then in that particular case, oozing from the dead person, not talking about a live person, but from the dead person, then in that case, you would become tummy by being in, under the same roof, so to speak, with that person. Okay?
Just dead alone would
right.
have been from
right.
a wound.
Right. 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 But, if blood is involved, then how much would automatically cause it, okay? So, according to Rabbi Akiva, he says that this revius of blood can be from two people. In other words, not for each individual a revius, but combined, it could be a revius, okay? Shemitamim b'yohad, it would cause too much. Shenemar, and he interprets the pasuk as follows: I'll call Nafsho's base lo yovo. That is not to come in contact with the Nafsho's. In other words, the souls of a dead person. So since the word Nafsho's is written in the plural, then therefore it has to be two, according to him. So that if the blood combined from this one and this one together makes already a revius, then in that particular case, that brings about tumah. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, okay? Shtei nefoshes says that's two souls. Mishiyur echad, right? In other words, two souls, but there's only one measurement, I mean the revius. Rabbanon, but the rabbis, nafshas kesiv. They read it in the Torah. I mean, they know it should be pronounced Nafshos. But what is the spelling? Spelling is without a vav, so that therefore it's singular, right? So that's it. Okay. All right. So we're going to stop at this particular point, because now they're going to refute all this argument that we had.
Okay.
Yeah. We continue now at the very bottom of Sanhedrin Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, and tonight is the 14th of May in the year 2008. Okay. All right. We had a very beautiful discussion about whether A, Yeshem LeMikra, Yeshem LeMesorah, in other words, how do you make a drash? You darshan, in other words, do you derive a rule from the way it is written or from the way in which it is read?
All right.
Okay?
And so. How can it be different between it's written and read?
Because when it comes to a drush, then sometimes we go according to the spelling rather than according to it. But this is what we're going to find out right now. Is it really a legitimate thing or not?
Well, drush is drush legitimate?
Drush means that you derive a rule from it. I mean, but not talking about a rabbi's sermon.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, how do you derive a halacha in this particular case, you know, from how the Torah words something.
Right.
Understand?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, Maskev lo Rav Acha ba Yaakov. Rav Acha ba Yaakov, he disagrees with everything that we said just before. Okay? He disagrees. Why? He says, Mi iko de lesle yeshem la mikro. Said, is there anyone who really disagrees with the fact that you have to go into the way you read the text, not the way it's written, but according to the way you read it, right? And now we're going to see that it's not as simple, is it? The Hotanya, did we learn Bachalev Imo? Remember, the Torah says three times, those of Vashel Gedi, Bachalev Imo. You're not allowed to cook. Old English, seed a kid in the milk of its mother, right? All right. So, take a look at the spelling, right? It says, Yochel Bechalev. Maybe you should read it not as Bachalev, but as Chalev. What is Chalev? Chalev is the forbidden fat in an animal. That's the chalev, right? Chalev, okay.
This is all because of the vowels?
There are no vowels in the Torah. That's the point. So when it comes to a drash, maybe it should have been interpreted not as a shalt not cook, you know, the kid in the milk of its mother, but maybe it should not be cooked in the fat of its mother.
Yeah.
Maybe, right? So, on the next page, okay? Next side of the page. Dalad Amid Beis, it says, Amrit Yeshem the Mikra, right? So, you have to say that, you know, you go according to the way you read it, right? Namely, how is it read? It's read Bachalev, in the milk, and not Bechelev. So, in that particular case, that proves that according to everybody, Yeshem Lamikra, right? You have to say that, you know, the preference is given to the way it is read, and not according to the way it is spelled in the Torah.
Well,
all right, that's fine so far, right?
How the vowels are assigned?
Yes. Yeah, of course, in all reality, it's the meaning that makes sense. And we'll get back to this again.
Well, all right.
You understand? We'll get back to this.
Little patience.
Okay. All right. So now, they analyzed the various arguments that they had before. Okay? The Rabbi Rabbanan. Rabbi Sovar Yarshiun Elohim Achri Dev Rabbanan Sovar Yarshiun Dehech Behai. Okay. The first argument that they had to do was, if you remember, we said how many judges you have to have in the Beis Din. Say you have to have three, right? Have to have three. How they derived that everybody had their own way of deriving it. One way was to say that, you know, Yarshiyun is a spelling, it's plural, and therefore you have to have two, right? And another one said three times the word Elohim is mentioned.
Right.
Therefore that shows that, you know, and the argument was whether we count the first reference to it or not, right? Dorshin Tchilas or not Dorshin Tchilas, okay? And we decided that the usual practice is not to count it, but so in that case, then the Rebbe has to derive the fact, before we get to Rebbe, but we have to derive the fact then that, three judges, if there are only two Elohims, so they said, okay, so add another judge so that you can have a best in note, you can have a majority decision, okay? These were some of the arguments that we had in the past couple of weeks, okay? Okay. But Rabbi came forth with a different idea. He said, what? That you start with three, but how many judges do you have to end up with when you give the final verdict?
Five.
Based on the fact that he says, right, that the three that the Torah mentions, I mean, on that basis, means that you have to have three judges of the Beis Din who are in agreement with each other. So that's why he says, that you have to have another two additional judges who are added, so that you can have a verdict given by three judges, okay, who are in agreement with each other. Pardon me? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the argument that we had last week. So he gets back. Yes, sure. Yes.
I know that if it's unanimous, it's thrown out. That doesn't work.
No, I said that's true in capital cases. Right, but not in monetary cases.
Not in monetary cases.
No.
So it can be. It could also be 4-1.
Sure. Yeah, could be. No question about that.
Right.
But the rabbis disagree with how many do you need. They don't say that you have to have five judges at the end. They say three is enough.
Yeah,
and this is what we're saying over here.
Why